supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Balls of the year. Joining me in the studio is our esteemed producer, Alexis Landis, who has gone through our year's worth of tapes and had the hard job of picking the best phone calls of the year. Was it hard to do?
It was really hard to do. We have so many great callers, but some of my favorite callers are those that call from the really unique locations. We've got people calling from Canada, from France, from Puerto Rico, all over the world, but one of the most unique callers was from an island in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, and I think he might have been the only guy on the island.
I later had an email exchange with him, and he assured me he was the only biped on that entire atoll. So let's take a look back. I remember that call. It was a great call. Michael, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm good, Michael. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thanks.
And where is Michael doing very well?
I'm in Wake Island in the Pacific Ocean.
Okay, great. You're the Michael I've been emailing with lately. You're on this crazy Pacific atoll. Describe the thing that you're on.
Well, it's basically a volcano that's died, and so it's a big cone-shaped island with a lagoon in the middle of it where the lava would have come out, and now it's just slowly but surely dying.
That's just amazing, but the weather there, of course, is fabulous. The water's 80 degrees every day.
Yeah, it's outstanding diving and fishing and sailing as well, yes.
So I know why you're calling, but tell everybody what you've been doing and what you're kind of looking for some help with.
I have a small beach house next to the water, of course, on the lagoon side, and I'm planting coconut palms. And I'm looking for the best way to fertilize them and help them to grow in these very difficult conditions, because the sand is basically coral. And so it's very difficult to retain water or nutrients. So I'm looking for the best way to keep them healthy and to help them grow faster.
Of course, you don't have a lot to work with, and it is seawater that washes over even the existing ones that were planted, let's presume, in the 70s.
Seawater can wash over the plants when we have a large surge, but normally they just get rainwater. And rainwater comes usually every other night.
Huh, okay.
The other factor is that it's very windy, obviously, with us being in the middle of the ocean. And so even when it does rain, the wind tends to dry up the area immediately. We could have a torrential rainstorm, and then all of a sudden the water will be evaporated either due to the sun or the wind or both.
So what do you got? You got your garbage, right? You got whatever is left over from what you're eating. You got your... What else you got to work with here, Mike?
Well, I was using fish that I catch from the lagoon. I was using ashes. I was thinking of trying to use coconuts, old coconuts that didn't grow, and any other leaves and twigs and whatnot that I can find and either burn it or bury it in the soil with the coconuts.
You have coffee grounds, right?
Yes, we do.
And what kind of kitchen waste? Do you have fresh food? What's the deal?
Yeah, we do have some fresh food, but usually that's just taken to the waste facility and burned.
And burned. Everything there is burned, which is why you're thinking ashes. You know what I would do? The faster they grow and the stronger they grow, the more they're going to survive the climactic conditions. After they sprout, I would sprinkle some coffee grounds around their base on a regular basis and see how they take that. That's nitrogen, it's calcium, it's phosphorus. They should like that. Since you're going to be, it sounds like you're into the ashes, I think the coffee grounds would be a good contribution to that, because they'd be acidic, whereby the ashes are all alkaline, so we'd be going with a more neutral fertilizer as opposed to working the edges of the pH range, where I don't think we want to go.
Yeah, I can definitely try that. One caveat to using the coffee grounds, though. I would have to bury it because we have hermit crabs all over the island, and if you throw coffee grounds on top of them,
right,
hermit crabs will just run and eat it all up.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, whatever you can cover it with.
Okay, well, I could definitely try that.
All right, and stay in touch, and let us know how it's doing.
Okay, I'll definitely give you an update here in a month or two. Thank you.
All right, very good. You take care, Michael. A great call. Thanks for getting in touch with us.
Thanks for all your help. Bye now.
Well, these calls from far away really are always fun. We love to get these long-distance callers on the line. But if there is one type of call that is at the heart of our show and at the heart of shows like Car Talk and anybody else who does the same kind of shtick, it is...
the wife and husband dispute. But I got to tell you, Mike... the wife is always right, right?
Right now, the wife has not always been right. She just has like a 98.7% average.
Okay.
I seem to remember there was a call once where the husband was right. And we were all so stunned. I mean, practically, we turned the electricity off and left the studio.
Well, in this particular case, we've got a husband and wife team that both have different compost piles. And she's actually putting some good stuff in her pile, and he's putting some not-so-good stuff in his pile. So let's take a listen and see how it all turns out.
Nancy, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Oh, I'm glad to have you here, Nancy. Where are you?
I'm in northern Wisconsin.
Where the girls are warmer. What can we do for Nancy in the frozen north?
Well, you can settle a problem my husband and I are having.
Oh, you're right.
We've got one issue we disagree on, and it's compost. We have his and hers piles, and I don't touch his, and he doesn't touch mine. Mine is a pile of compost just off the chicken coop in the garden where I put the chicken manure and the bedding and the garden waste and kitchen scraps, and it doesn't get used until it sits for at least a good year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, out behind the big shed is his pile, and what he's got in there is chunkier stuff, sticks and branches and leaves and pine needles and just anything he picks up around the yard. And he doesn't have a pile. He's got it all spread out, and he power tills it into our sandy soil. And it's gotten to be about 6 inches thick, and he wants to plant a garden in there, and I'm scared to do it.
Right. And do we have, even though we have his and hers composting systems, do we have a common garden? It might be time for a Maginot marriage line of demarcation down the center of the garden here.
Actually, he doesn't get to come in the garden. No, he has not put any of this in my vegetable garden.
Oh, good,
he wants to make a new garden on this spot where he has been tilling all this junk.
Well, he can.
Okay.
He can, but not in your garden.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Will his plants grow as good as mine?
No. His won't grow at all.
So I should just give him my leftover seeds and let him discover it for himself?
Oh, I think let him fend with his own resources. Now, let me talk to you about both your composts.
Okay.
Your compost is going to be very strong because of the chicken manure.
Right.
And the only brown you seem to have in yours is in your bedding material, which
right.
is straw?
It's pine shavings.
Pine shavings, okay. Now, your chicken manure is the highest nitrogen
right.
of any barnyard manure. You know it is much too hot to use fresh in any
That's
form.
Right.
Even when your manure is finished cooking, it's still going to be slightly unbalanced. So your composted chicken manure
okay.
is going to grow you the world's greatest sweet corn. It's a great lawn fertilizer, probably good for potatoes, lettuces, but it could give you, with fruiting plants, it could give you very large plants that don't have as many fruits as they should because it's so high in nitrogen.
Okay.
And I think the only thing you need to do is mix in a little natural phosphorus and potassium to make sure that you balance it out. Now, your husband is totally fakakta. He's just playing around with no idea of what's going on here.
He's getting rid of stuff he doesn't know where to put.
And that's fine. Mm-hmm. If you have brushy material, if you have tree limbs, and if you've got a lot of property, just pile that stuff up in an out-of-the-way place and leave it be. And then move the pile after 2 or 3 years, and you will be amazed. You should never till any kind of woody material into the soil. You're absolutely correct. Wood chips on the surface of the soil will absorb some nitrogen, but if you till them in, they'll suck up all the nitrogen, all the food in the soil, in their quest to decompose. So really what he should be doing now is making real compost by shredding fall leaves, and that's a great thing to add the kitchen waste and the spent plants from the garden to, and then just spread that on the surface of the soil rather than till it in, and you won't create any new weed problems.
Sounds good.
All right. Well, good luck. And as always, when men and women disagree, the smart money goes with the woman, even without hearing the details.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, Nancy. Good luck.
Bye-bye.
That was lots of fun. All right. Well, it's time for us to take a short break and remind everybody who's getting ready to take down a cut Christmas tree that the cut branches from that tree will make a great springy protection against the crushing weight of heavy snow and ice. That's why my old boughs are set aside to cover my overwintering pansies should the forecast turn nasty. But don't you go sharpening your shears to make a perfect emergency mulch just yet, because we, Mike McGrath and Alexis Landis, will be right back with more of our favorite phone calls from the past year on You Bet Your Garden.
This is WHYY-FM.
Karen Treatment Centers support WHYY. For more than 50 years, Karen Treatment Centers have helped thousands of people from addiction to recovery. Karen Treatment Centers use research-based techniques to help people advance from where they are today to recovery for life. More information is available at Karen.org. Caron.org. Karen Treatment Centers. Recovery for life.
WHYY programming is supported by the teachers and education support professionals of the Pennsylvania State Education Association, educating all children for a bright future. We are PSEA, providing the power of a great education.
The WHYY forecast, partly sunny this afternoon with a high near 54 degrees. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low around 38. And tomorrow, mostly sunny with a chance of showers and a high near 55 degrees. It's 51 degrees in Center City, Philadelphia at 11:19. You're listening to WHYY-FM.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, coming up a little later in the show because it's New Year's time. We have your gardening New Year's resolutions that'll make you a better gardener and a better person coming up at the end of the show. But right now, we're going to go back to doing something a little different. Joining me in the studio is our esteemed producer, Alexis Landis, who's been poring over our year worth of phone calls to pick out some very special ones for us to listen back to celebrate the new year. What do you got for us now, Alex?
Oh, we got a lot of great stuff. We're going to take a plane trip over to France, southwest France, where a woman is dealing with frelon, which is the French equivalent for Asiatic hornets. And she's doing this around a medieval castle. So it's a pretty interesting setting for this this common problem.
If you want to go into heating problems, I live in a medieval castle, I have a feeling. All right, let's listen. Karen, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
I'm so glad to be on your program.
I'm so glad to have you on my program, Karen. Where are you?
I'm in Ségur-le-Château, which is in southwest France.
Oh, excellent. Well, you've just raised the class level of this show, 100,000.
but I went to Penn.
University of Penn.
Yes, I did. And I went to the University of Pennsylvania.
And now you're in France.
I am.
And may I ask, what took you to France?
I'm an architect, and I was looking for an unusual project to work on, and I Googled Castle France, and I found an old building.
And are
true
you...
True story, Googled Castle France.
It sounds like you're living the dream here.
Well, yes and no, till I became invaded with frelons, which are Asiatic hornets.
Oh. And
the topic of our conversation.
And what are your hornets doing?
They are attracted so far only to raspberries, and I planted the raspberries about five years ago, and they do very well on a south-facing, well-drained slope. We get a lot of sun and a good bit of rain, and I have had a great crop since I put them in, and this is the first year, and they actually just showed up last week. So they are hovering dozens and dozens of them amongst the raspberries.
Now, are these kind of real true hornets living in a big visible nest somewhere out in the open?
Well, we can't find the nest. An Asiatic hornet prefers a conifer if they can have them, and I have giant conifers. So
right.
To see very high up is quite difficult. So the nest is not in evidence. If it were, I would hire somebody to get rid of it. But we can't find the nest.
You got to slap little GPS tracers on these things.
That's what we need.
Okay.
And I've tried this particular kind of hornet is attracted to meat. I've tried the meat lure. They've been eating up a good bit of our honeybee population, which is a problem. They arrived in France probably around 2004. And I've tried the traps where you put you can put any kind of mixture in them. It's the kind where the bug flies up and can't fly down. So far, there's so much fruit, they're not interested in the trap mixture.
Hornets, like yellow jackets, like your Asiatic hornets, are going to go for two different kind of foods. But you're talking about mixtures. So I'm wondering, have you put out something as simple and as dedicated? What I use are old quart jars that, like organic lemonade came in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're glass jars. They could be plastic with a metal lid. I take the lid off. I knock a hole, single hole through it with a Phillips head screwdriver. And then I use multiple jars. And in half the jars, I put old ham. I get some old sliced cheap ham, and I let it go just slightly bad.
Okay.
And I put just ham in some of the jars. And then in the other jars, you want rotten fruit. You want peaches that are overripe, something that really has a strong smell.
Okay.
The other thing you can do is to get some old window screening. And
yes,
actually bend it and surround large clusters of berries so that, but you can't let the screening touch the berries or they'll actually eat the berries through the screening. But think about ways that you might be able to screen them out with cheesecloth, window screening, anything that breathes a little bit so the berries don't get moldy, but that doesn't have big enough openings for the wasps to get through. And then, like bird netting, you make sure it doesn't actually touch the fruit. And the final thing, and here's a question from an ignorant American for you. Do you have electricity handy?
Not that handy.
Oh, okay.
I mean, one could attach cords to cords to cords to cords and get electricity out there. I mean, we do on the property, but it's, you know, a distance from where the plants are.
It sounds like you'd blow up the light bulbs of neighbors for miles around.
Would we be electrocuting them? Is that the option?
No, not electrocuting them, but sucking them up with a shop vac vacuum cleaner that you would then...
Ooh, I like that.
Yes. And, you know, some of these... You can actually buy, like, cordless ones that work on rechargeable batteries.
Yeah.
And then you can go out and you can take these little suckers on head-to-head. You can actually just, while they're hovering over your fruit, you can hover over them, turn the vacuum on. And you did go to the University of Pennsylvania, so you would know to trash-talk them as they go down the tube into the bag.
And then, may I ask, how long do you wait to empty it?
You leave it out in the sun for a day, and that takes care of it.
And they cook.
Yeah, and you just make sure you duct tape up the hole before you do that so they can't fly back out.
It's kind of an inverse leaf blower.
Exactly.
Great. Sounds great.
All right. Well, good luck, Karen, and enjoy your Provençal lifestyle there.
Thank you. I will email back the results. How's that?
Excellent. Excellent. You should always have great raspberries.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. If you recall that phone call from a previous show, it's because my producer, Lexis Landis, and I are listening back to our favorite calls from the past year to celebrate the new year. Boy, I'd like to be in France right now. I'd like to be in France in the springtime. What's up next, Alexis? We got a husband and wife dispute, or are we still in exotic locales?
We're still in exotic locales. Let's travel a little bit north to a small country called Belgium. Wonderful chocolate, I know, and many other things come out of there. But this gentleman called us in the evening over there and had an issue with some trees that were planted around where he lived. So let's take a listen to what's going on in Belgium.
Barry, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello, Mike. Thank you.
Oh, hello, Barry. Thank you. How are you, man?
I'm doing rather well. I'm sitting around in the dark having a chat with you.
Okay. Why are you in the dark, may I ask?
Well, I'm calling from Brussels in Belgium, which is basically the country north of France, south of Holland.
Now, how do you hear our show?
Oh, I'm a podcast fanatic. You know, I like to garden, went onto podcasts with iTunes and stuff, did some research, looked around, traipsed across shows. And, you know, my father used to sit at the kitchen table with a shortwave radio and listening to radio shows all over the world, and I do the same thing, but with podcasts.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, it really is kind of the same kind of culture. That's wonderful.
It's the evolution of it, yeah.
I'm glad you found us. Okay, so what's going on? What can we do for you?
I live in a very heavily shaded garden area. It's an old factory where we used to have a concrete floor that got picked out, heavy packed in clay.
Really?
And they planted trees there before they did any treatment to the soil. And they planted the root ball about 20, 25 centimeters deeper than the surface of the soil. And, of course, one, two, three trees died.
Oh, what a sin.
We got to the third tree this year. Well, it's almost dead. It was just barely hanging on. In September, there were no leaves on the tree at all. Everything was shed. But we pulled it out of the ground, lifted it up to root level, again, to the surface level, and replanted it in the hopes that in this improved soil and with the elevation, so the roots, the bark, isn't buried in the soil, we could make it survive. And I know how much you detest the idea of mulches touching trees, and I can't imagine what you think about being buried.
One of the first things I was taught back when I was the editor of Organic Gardening magazine is that a lot of people who even consider them professionals plant trees too deeply. They like to see this lollipop coming out of the ground, and the sign of an intelligent tree planting is when you can see the dramatic root flare above ground, that musculature of the tree, and when you don't see it, it means that some of the bark is underground and being covered and kept moist, and that's exactly the same danger as when people foolishly mound mulch around the bark. It's exactly the same thing. The bark is supposed to be exposed to the air and breathe, and anything that keeps it wet, as you know, can rot the bark or girdle it or allow little voles or other rodents to get under there and eat away that tender bark undetected. So they had been in this improper planting for around 3 or 4 years?
Yeah, from day one, but it's running 3 to 4 years.
It seems like you may have pulled the drowning person out of the water just in time.
I would like that.
So you've raised the tree up. You improved the soil a little bit around its base.
It's one of these tragic aspects of community gardening. People do things the wrong way. And after they bury the tree, and I'd sort of begged them to wait until we improved the soil, then we brought in 8 cubic meters of black soil and put in this beautiful deep level, which has helped enormously. But, of course, that just made everything worse and worse. But now it's been raised up. The roots have a place to run now.
Okay, very good. I'm very impressed that you were able to raise up the tree. Were the roots kind of stunted underground?
Oh, enormously.
When exactly did you levitate the tree?
2 weeks ago.
Oh, okay. So we haven't been through a cycle yet. And
no.
So I would say don't do anything else now. over the winter, try to locate some compost or worm castings.
And I actually have packs of worm castings in my back room. I grow my own worms, we could say.
Very good. You and I both.
They're adorable.
They are. They're really cute. And in the spring, when it starts to green up, lay down like a solid half an inch of worm casting, starting about 6 inches away from the trunk and going out as far as the furthest piece of root.
Okay.
All right. Well, Barry, we wish you great luck with your tree here, man.
Thank you for your time.
Bye-bye. That was tons of fun. You know, Alexis, it amazes me how many emails we get from around the world of people who are listening to our podcasts. You know me, I'm an old Luddite. I barely know what a podcast is. But it's really wonderful to think that people in Australia and Singapore and all around the world are listening to our show. So are we still traveling the globe, or are we going to listen to calls about other topics?
Well, now, we've come back home, Mike, and we're going to talk about a common problem with reptiles. And this woman is scared to death of this huge snake that is living underneath her house. But you assuaged some of her fears in this call, so let's take a listen to Jackie.
Jackie, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Well, hi, how are you?
I'm doing very well, Jackie. How are you?
Excellent, thank you.
And where is Jackie excellent?
In New Jersey, in Hopewell.
Oh, right. And what can we do for you?
I have a reptile problem, a scary primal kind of reptile problem. A snake has taken up residence under my front walkway, and he's been there for about a month, and he's large. I would say about 2.5 or 3 feet long. He's absolutely terrifying. I'm sprinting in and out the front door to avoid him. I've been told he's a northern water snake. You know, he's not poisonous, but he's not leaving either. And that's my question. How do you make a snake go away and live a happy life someplace else and stay away?
Well, now, you say he's under your walkway. Does this mean you have an elevated, like, boardwalk-type thingy?
No, actually, it's an ordinary sort of concrete, almost like a sidewalk thing. And there, unbeknownst to me, there was must have been a little opening, invisible almost, kind of an opening, and he seems to slide right underneath.
Oh, okay, so you've seen him coming and going.
Yes, real quickly. He slides right underneath in a second. And when he's out, you know, sometimes he's partially out, sometimes he's completely out.
And what makes you think that it's a water snake? I mean, did somebody actually see it and make an ID?
Yeah, I had a photo, a really good photo of it, mm-hmm. and I emailed it to the New Jersey Wildlife Department, and a biologist came back and said that's definitely what it is. He told me exactly what it is.
A snake of that size is eating rats and mice and moles and voles and protecting you from vermin.
That's true.
I don't think he's interested in you as prey, you realize.
I know, but he really has an unnatural amount of fearfulness about it to me. What would make a snake like that go away happily?
There's just a small entrance hole that you can see?
There's just a small entrance hole that I can see.
I mean, the only answer is to fill it. Is the concrete in sections, or is it one big piece?
I would say it's in sections.
If someone were to lift up that section, fill in the area underneath it with dirt, I would say he would go away. If you get a snake enthusiast out there, they can come with a snake kit, and they can just take him away. They can just lasso him,
mm-hmm.
and they can take him, and they can put him in a stream, you know, a couple of miles away, and no harm would be done. These creatures tend to translocate very well. But I would urge you not to hurt him.
Yeah, I don't really want to hurt him. I just want him to be somewhere else, you know.
I think if you hire somebody, get a couple of guys over, you know, and they would get pry bars, they would lift up that piece of concrete. I think that's 90% of it. Once that concrete is exposed, I don't think he's going to want to be there anymore. And then you simply fill it in with regular dirt. And then you can just go out to a store and buy edging metal edging, heavy plastic edging that you can drive into the ground next to your walkway so that this doesn't happen again.
That sounds like a great idea. All right, his name is Arnold, by the way.
Arnold the Snake. See, you're beginning a relationship already. These things take time, Jack. I mean, you know, your impulsive reaction of disgust and fear is not unlike that of any woman when she meets a man for the first time. I mean, it's, you know, you got to get over these things.
I'm working on it.
All right.
Thank
good luck,
so
Jack.
Much.
Take care. Thank you. You know, whenever I think of that phone call, I think somehow I should have tried to work a snakes on a plane joke into there somewhere. Well, it is time for us to take a little break from our New Year's frivolity and remind everyone who wants to get an amaryllis to rebloom that they should give the plant a gentle feeding after the flowers fade and water lightly until the green leaves that have emerged last turn to brown. Then give the bulb a rest, in or out of its pot, in a cool, dry spot. No food, no water until the end of August. Then repot the big bulb, water it well, give it good light, and you just might get a fresh run of flowers for the holidays. But don't you go feeding that festive plant just yet, because I'll be right back with my producer, Alexis Landis, listening to more of our favorite phone calls from the past year, ending up with your New Year's garden resolutions. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden. Mike McGrath, right back at you with local events. New Year's Eve starts early at historic Laurel Hill Cemetery, where the birthday of General George Meade will be celebrated at 2 p.m. this afternoon with Civil War reenactors, a 21-gun salute, champagne toast, and reception, all free and open to the public. Think you have a blue ribbon begonia? The Delaware Valley branch of the American Begonia Society will tell you how to get it ready to compete at the famed Philadelphia Flower Show next Saturday, January 8th at 10 a.m. at the Huntington Valley Library. And I'll open my speaking season with an appearance at the Grounds for Sculpture Park in Hamilton, New Jersey on Sunday, February 5th. We'll post all the details at the events section of our website, youbetyourgarden.org.
The WHYY forecast, partly sunny this afternoon with a high near 54 degrees. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low around 38. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a chance of showers and a high near 55. And Monday, a mix of sun and clouds with a high around 42. It's 54 degrees in Horsham, Pennsylvania, and 53 degrees in Center City, Philadelphia at 11:39. This is WHYY.
For centuries, people from China have moved to American cities in search of work. Now, China's economy is booming, and the U.S. isn't looking quite as attractive.
You can think about Chinatown as a revolving door, this continuing influx and exit for people.
I'm Rebecca Shear. Changes in Chinatown. That's next time on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Coming up this afternoon at 5 o'clock on WHYY-FM.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll get to the question of the week, which in the festive spirit of this New Year's show is not a question at all. It's kind of more like marching orders. We've made up 8 resolutions we want you to follow to be good and greener gardeners in the new year. In the meantime, my producer Alexis Landis and I are listening back to our favorite phone calls of yours from the previous year. Alexis, what you got up for us next?
We have a woman in North Carolina who is actually calling to comment on a previous call, one that we just heard, about another woman who had an issue with a snake. This woman, Valeria, is very upset because someone has killed her snake. So let's hear more about what happened and the murder mystery going on in North Carolina.
Valeria, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Valeria. Where are you?
I'm in New Bern, North Carolina.
Excellent, excellent. All right, what can we do for Valeria?
Well, a woman called in and said she wanted to get rid of a snake.
Right.
And if I remember correctly, you said that women don't like snakes, and I wanted to say not all women feel that way about snakes.
So I presume I'm talking to a snake-loving woman.
Well, as long as they continue to stay in the yard and do their job, then yes. I'm not one of those people who wants to put them in an aquarium and have them slithering around in my house.
Oh, no, and I have to agree with you there. I've never really understood that. I don't think the snake has a great time either. But outdoors, as we said to her, they are tremendous pest controllers. Little snakes eat bugs and snails that are close to the ground. And then the bigger a snake gets, and I guess to some people the more frightening it looks, now we're talking the rat patrol and getting rid of mice and voles and real serious vermin. And I presume that's why you're happy to coexist?
Well, yes. And currently I'm not coexisting. We have had two snakes in recent memory who took up here. And they had to have a reason for being here or they wouldn't have been here. So we were happy to have them. My husband is the person who was phobic about snakes, but he made peace with Herman. He said, Herman, if you stay out there, don't come any closer than the walk where I can see you. And, you know, we're cool. But if you come up on the porch, we've got a problem. And so Herman never came any closer to the porch than just the front walk. And he was doing his rat patrol thing when we hired a man to come in and clean out the shrubbery and put down mulch for the winter. And he encountered Herman, and he murdered Herman.
Oh!
He then told my husband that he had killed a snake very proudly, and my husband said, oh, my gosh, I'll try not to let my wife find out you did that, but I suggest you not be here when she gets home because she's not going to be happy. The gardener person could not understand why anybody would want a snake. Now, it was a black snake. It wasn't a copperhead. Black snakes are perfectly harmless.
I want to avenge Herman. Can we prosecute? My friend Jeff Cox, who worked with me at Organic Gardening magazine, moved out to the West Coast, where he became a wine and food writer and still writes about gardening and stuff. But out in the West Coast, he began to experience gophers. And he learned a trick from his new West Coast friends to always drive around with a big burlap sack and a snake git in your trunk. And you would find these big black rat snakes sunning themselves sometimes on roadways and rocks. And they taught him how to approach the snake, how to get it into the bag. He's one of the gentlest people I knew. But he said he got the greatest satisfaction the first time he was able to empty a burlap sack down into a gopher burrow, and the snake went right into the burrow.
Well, I guess the snake forgave him for the kidnap once he had encountered the gophers. So.
Knowing Jeff, he would be explaining to the snake that he was taking him out to dinner. All right, Valeria, pleasure to speak with you. Thanks very much for talking
You're
with
welcome.
Us. You're welcome. You take care. Thank you very much.
You too. Bye-bye.
Well, I know some people out there are probably saying the only good snake is a dead snake, but you know how I feel about that. If all the snakes were dead, we'd be overrun with a vermin. We got a lot of calls about snakes. It's a, you know, it's something that seems to really affect people.
Well, pets in general. I mean, I know I can never explain my dog's behavior, and no one else can.
Do you have a pet snake, Alexis?
Not a pet snake, but
we're learning more about the producer of You Bet Your Garden than we ever expected to during this New Year's special, ladies and gentlemen. Does your snake have a name?
Yoshi, and he has four legs and is black and white. But
you could make some money off that thing at state fairs, you know.
That's very true.
You're talking about your mischievous dog.
I certainly am, who is allergic to rosemary and who knows what else.
Which I gave her last Christmas, ladies and gentlemen. I gave her a beautiful rosemary Christmas tree and almost killed your dog.
I had to throw it out because of my dog.
Oh, I thought you were going to throw out the dog, you know.
Well, we have another caller here who has a really difficult problem with his dog who is munching on their trees. So let's find out what happens.
Bo, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing good, Bo. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Thanks for asking.
And where is Bo doing great?
I'm in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma.
Excellent, excellent. One of the stations that put us on the air right away when we went national. We love being on the air in Oklahoma.
Well, we really enjoy your show here. I know lots of people who listen.
Yes, no, it's a great place for us. What can we do for you, Bo?
Well, I have a 1.5-year-old boxer who likes to be outside during the day, and he also enjoys killing the trees in the backyard.
The way most dogs do?
Well, I'm not sure how. I've never seen a dog do this, but he likes to strip the bark off of our trees.
And then what does he do with it?
He eats it.
He eats it.
Or shreds it.
Right.
He'll pull the branches off and chews on those, too.
Okay.
Now, my question is, we have about 13 trees in the back, and he's killed, I think, 7 of them. But most of them are really young, and we had intended on getting rid of them, so we really didn't think anything about it. But we have a maple tree that is a lot older than the other ones that he had left alone for about 1.5 years. And then I would say maybe a couple of weeks ago, or maybe even 10 days ago, he decided to strip all the bark off of this maple tree. And it's, I would say it's probably about 7 or 8 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And it still looks okay, but it hasn't gotten hot here yet either. And we were wondering if there was anything that we could do to save it.
Well, first of all, has he stripped it in a complete circle around the tree?
Unfortunately, yes, he has at the base of it.
Then the tree will die.
Okay, there's just nothing that we can do.
No, that outer layer is the only thing that can carry nutrients up to the canopy of the tree. Now, what you should have done is, after the first couple of trees, you should have just gone out and wrapped the trunks of the remaining trees with chicken wire.
No, you're exactly right. And we had talked about it, but the thing is we... most of those trees we were going to have taken out and re-landscape the yard anyway.
But you, by not doing so, you have reinforced this bad behavior.
It's true.
You know, you could have trained him passively to stop doing this by the next bark he put his teeth into being chicken wire. So, you know, sooner or later, you're going to get tired of buying new trees.
No, it's true.
And doggy's going to get a flying lesson.
Yes.
So before that happens, you have to begin training him by putting, just wrapping loosely, not tightly, but loose chicken wire around the base of the tree. You could also spray it with a dog or cat repellent or a deer repellent. But you'd have to keep respraying it, whereby the chicken wire loose around the bottom of the tree is a perfect defense. But have you talked to the vet about this?
No, actually, we haven't. Well, no, I take that back. I think we mentioned it. But again, at the time, you're right. We should have done something about it.
But I also wonder if there's not some nutrient deficiency going on here with the dog that he is trying to counteract, something he's not getting in his diet that is sending him to chew bark.
Definitely.
All right, Bo. Sorry about that one tree, but I think you know what to do for the future.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for your time.
All right. You take care, sir.
Bye-bye.
Yes. Pets in the garden. A constant topic. Well, great job, Alexis. Those were fabulous phone calls. Thanks for going back through all those endless tapes and picking out these real winners. We'll have to do this again next year.
It was a lot of fun. I can't wait.
But we're not done yet. It's time for me to help you figure out which gardening resolutions you're going to adopt for the new year. Now, let's face it, conventional American gardeners have a lot of bad habits to get over. They feed their plants high explosives. They scalp their lawn so low the dirt blows out the back of the mower. They smother their poor trees' trunks with chipped-up pallets and think every bug is a pest to be pilloried. But no more. It's a new beginning. A new year in which you're going to have your best garden ever. Because you're going to raise your right hand... Your other right hand, and repeat these resolutions after me. Resolution number one, I will strive to get my plants off drugs and go organic. Get back here, you scaredy cat. All this means is you won't be attacking the environment and yourself with caustic chemical fertilizers, hormonally harmful herbicides, and poisonous pesticides. Instead, resolution number two, I will make or buy, borrow, or steal compost. Commercial fertilizers contain harsh chemical salts whose otherworldly use is in the manufacture of high explosives. These unnecessary additives weaken your plants by forcing them to grow faster than nature ever intended, which makes them much more susceptible to pest and disease attack. And those chemicals pollute our waterways and natural areas. And none of the other girls like them. And anyway, instead, feed your garden the way nature feeds the forests, with compost made from shredded leaves, or with the supernatural castings produced by worms, a bin, and your kitchen waste. 2 inches of compost or 1 inch of worm castings provides all the food any plant needs for a year, and they will make your landscape naturally resistant to pests and disease. Resolution number three, I will water correctly. Frequent short sprinkles are a cheap tease that results in weak, shallow-rooted plants. Your lawn and garden want a major soaking, an inch of water, which is a lot, once a week. If nature provides that, sit on your hose. If nature doesn't, try and deliver it all in one shot, ending just as the sun is rising. Never water in the evening and then let your lawn or garden stay wet overnight. And never, ever water every day. Your plant's roots need to dry out between waterings. Resolution number four, I will mulch. Applying a 1 to 2 inch layer of shredded leaves, dried grass clippings from an herbicide-free lawn, or compost around your plants will help retain soil moisture, keep your plant's roots nice and cool during heat waves, and prevent weeds. Just don't use wood. Although they are touted as, quote, mulch, wood chips, and shredded bark are actually disease-breeding, plant-food-stealing, waste-disposal problems. Resolution number five, I will not kill my lawn. Most Americans cut all the green growth off their grass every weekend, then complain about how bad it looks and pour chemicals on top. Instead, simply adjust your mower's cutting height to allow your grass to reach its natural height, and it will thrive. That's 2 to 2.5 inches for warm season grasses down south, 3 inches for northern cool season grasses in full sun, and 3.5 inches for cool season lawns in shade. Giving your lawn the correct cut will help it grow deep roots that crowd out even the worst weeds. A lawn that's correctly cut also looks great, with fewer visible ruts and bare spots. And correctly cut lawns grow slower than scalped ones, which means you'll do much less cutting. Resolution number six, I will mulch my clippings. Fresh grass clippings are 10% nitrogen by weight. Nitrogen is a lawn's favorite food. Lawns thrive on fertilizers that are 10% nitrogen by weight. Sense a pattern here? Use a mulching mower to return the pulverized clippings to your turf, and you'll supply a full half of the food your lawn needs, and you won't have to deal with any messy clippings. Oh, and man, don't try using the thatch excuse here. Those ugly dead stolons on top of the lawn aren't caused by returning the nutrients and grass clippings to your turf. They're caused by overuse of chemical fertilizers. Resolution number seven, I will not panic when I see a bug. Only a very small percentage of insects are pests. A larger percentage are beneficials that either prey on true pests or pollinate your plants. And the vast majority of insects are neither friend nor foe. They're just there. So don't go killing everything you see. A lot of buzzing and flying is often just a sign that your garden is healthy and organic. If you do identify a true pest, spray it with something non-toxic like insecticidal soap or horticultural oil. but leave unknown bugs alone. They're probably there to help. And your final resolution, keep that hand in the air now, kids. This is the important one. I will absolutely have fun. Don't lose sight of why we love to grow things. Nature is beautiful and relaxing. We try and capture the spirit of nature when we garden. So let nature do her thing, and you relax and have a good time. Your sanctuary of solace is no place for poisons. Well, that sure was a good list of resolutions for you to follow in the new year, now wasn't it? Luckily for yous, or unluckily if you wanted to forget some of them, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To carefully review this week's edition with links to details on many of those topics, just click the link at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Yikes, my producer is threatening to leave me behind in the old year if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499. Or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. Please tell us where you live. Put the actual subject in the subject line and check first to see if the information you seek is already waiting for you at our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you can click through to the question of the week. Find the solution to hundreds of garden problems, hint, hint, just like yours, hint, hint, in our Garden Answers A to Z section, and or listen to this show, listen to old shows, and or download this week's podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week is Kevin Love Train Griffin. Our webmasters are Baneful Rich Banowitz and Sarah the She-Devil Kazar. The festive Alexis Landis produces and co-edits You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. We bid adieu to production assistant Julia Worski, who starts the new year with a new job. Congratulations and good luck, Julia. Our editor, Al Banks, says he's happy to still have his old job in the new year. I'm Mike McGrath, and yeah, I'm still writing 1972 on my checks, so I think I'll see you next week, or, you know, maybe it's the week before that, or is Nixon still president? How come comic books cost $4? Shouldn't they still be 12 cents? What's going on out there? Worried about the safety of store-bought food? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll name the crops that are most often recalled for contamination and explain which ones are easy for a home gardener to grow, plus your fabulous phone calls.
You're listening to WHYY-FM. A quick garden calendar update. The General Mead Celebration